Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out. I'm Billy Allen.
And I'm John Mayer. And today we're lucky to be joined by Kelsey Robinson. She's a former first-team All-American at the University of Nebraska, a member of the 2015 World Championship team, and a bronze medalist in the 2016 Rio Olympics. Kelsey, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me. Excited to be on.
We're excited to have you. Little backstory, we actually did this about 6 months ago, and it was probably the best episode we've ever done. You nailed it, like knocked it out of the park. We're like, yes, this is so good.
We were in tears.
And we somehow threw, you were in China and whatever, we messed up the recording and no one got to hear it but us. So we felt like we've got to do it again. We've got to get people to hear your stories and hear what you've learned. So thanks so much for doing it again with us.
Yeah, I'm excited. And like I said, hopefully I can remember what I said.
we fired Nils. We blamed it on him. So
it was his fault. Yeah.
Perfect.
So speaking of adversity, our topic today is fighting through adversity. And you had mentioned this topic, and I was surprised that you'd chosen this because you're someone who's young and has experienced a lot of success. So I'm wondering why this topic resonates with you.
Yeah, I think for me that's perfect what you said. I think a lot of people see on the outside, oh, young, already an Olympian and accomplished a lot and stuff like that. But I think throughout the course of my career, I've always been tested and in some way, shape, or form. And going through those things has been difficult. But every time I've gone through something challenging, it's always led to something really satisfying. And I always end up having a lot more gratitude for that just because I've had to really challenge myself. And so I think a lot of people can go through things and, you know, just look at it negatively. But I try to like look at those things and be positive about, you know, what can come from this. But yeah, when I was in college, I spent my first 3 years at the University of Tennessee and decided to transfer to the University of Nebraska for 1 year, my senior year. And that wasn't an easy decision. And I went through some things that ultimately led me to make that change. And then from there, I went to the national team and I tried out as a libero. And I'm 6'1", 6'2", with shoes. So I'm a pretty big libero. But I made the team as a libero and had a great senior year and ended up going to the outside hitter position, coming back from that. And spent the next 3 years as an outside hitter and ultimately got to be an outside at the 2016 Olympics.
Cool. Well, I want to dive into a lot of the details on that stuff. But first, I just want to hit on you mentioned how you had gratitude, how you were thankful for challenges. And I'm wondering, did someone help you look at challenges that way, or how did you get to that space? Because I don't think a lot of people see failure and challenges in that sort of light.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a combination of things. Obviously, my family and my support group are always the ones who help me to see those things as an opportunity. But after going through things that really test you and test who you are as a person, not only as an athlete, but off the court too. You can either choose to, you know, hide from that or fall apart or decide you don't want to do it anymore and not fight through it. But I think if you choose to embrace the opportunity and embrace the challenge, that's what kind of shows you, or it makes you really grateful when those things work out. And it really helps you to take advantage of every opportunity given to you. And I think when I was, you know, battling and trying to make the rosters with the USA team, every single time I made a roster, I was just so grateful for it. I remember the first time after I graduated college, I went to Puerto Rico and I ended up tearing my shoulder within 2 weeks of getting there and having to go back to USA. And I spent about 3 to 4 months rehabbing it back in the USA gym, not really knowing what I was going to do, not really knowing if I even had a shot with the national team. I'd never done it before and I'd never been any, any kind of pipeline or, to be honest, Karch had no idea who I was. And so I just was rehabbing and putting a lot of work in and started practicing towards the end of those 4 months. And I remember Karch came up to me and I was working out and he said, well, Kesh, we want to take you on your first trip to Montreux in Zurich, Switzerland. I think it was in Zurich. No, in Montreux, Switzerland. And I was like, yeah, of course I want to go. And I got in the car and I called my dad and I just started crying. It was just like all the hard work and everything I'd been going through was just worth something. Like it was worth that moment, that small tournament that I had made, that small roster that I had made was just like such a blessing for me. And then it made me want to keep going. But yeah, I think the lesson is the more you are open to those opportunities and the more you're challenged and the more you decide to say yes to those challenges instead of saying no, the more you feel that gratitude towards when you have positive outcomes and when you make rosters or when you're just going through things in life and you finally get a break. I think just being open to challenges has really showed me how to be grateful for things.
That's cool. I guess I just want to hear some more about kind of how you approach this adversity. Can you think of any other moments on the volleyball court that stood out where you faced adversity and kind of how you manage those situations, whether in college or professionally?
Yeah, I think when you get to the professional level, you are no longer like a college stud or a high school stud. You're no longer the one that's going to score every single point, or you're surrounded by not only people that are your age, but like women, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds playing that are better than you, and they're stronger than you, and they're more physical, and they're smarter. And you have to learn to play the game at a high level. And I think something that was definitely challenging for me was when I first got to the national team. And it's something that I still kind of battle here and there. But just the idea that everyone else is better than you. That was something that was really difficult, was to, you know, I'm not as good as the person next to me, or I'm not as good as the person in my position. And there's so many other people that are better than me. And how can I go on the court and give to my teammates and find a way to contribute and find a way to, you know, make a difference on the court in more than just scoring or doing the volleyball things, but just finding a way to give to my teammates. And I think everybody kind of battles those mental thoughts when they're on the court, whether it's, you know, what I experienced or something different, and finding ways to embrace that and know that those thoughts are there and not, you know, disregard them, but acknowledge those thoughts and then, you know, replace it with something positive. And, you know, I deserve to be here and I'm just as good and I bring things that they can't bring. And that's something that, you know, I think every athlete battles. I also battle it, you know, till this day. It doesn't really ever go away. But yeah, I think that's something that is huge for a lot of athletes.
And when you say like bringing things to your teammates, and I mean, are you talking about communication, or what are some ways where you can be, I guess, that good team player in that kind of situation?
Yeah, I think when I left college, I was like, okay, I can score, I can do a lot of things, and I want to score like 25 points a game and all those things. And then when you get to professional and they just dig you every single ball and you're just like, I can't put the ball down, like, to save my life. And I think when you're younger, you identify yourself by how much you score or how many blocks you get or how offensive you are. And something that I've always, you know, tried to fall back on, if maybe my offense isn't there, is my defense and passing. My mom taught me that actually a long time ago when I was in, I think it was like a freshman in high school, and she didn't know anything about volleyball because I was a basketball family. I played basketball my whole life. And so she would try to like help me out as much as she could. And she would say, you know, if your offense isn't coming, like defense first, like basketball, defense first. And so that actually stuck with me forever. How can I get a dig, or how can I pass really well, and how can I cover really well and just help my team in those areas if my offense isn't there. And that like small little lesson has stayed with me my entire life. I'm about to be 25 and going into my fourth year of professional volleyball, and I still think defense and passing first. And those are obviously volleyball skills as far as giving to your teammates. How can I be a really great passer, a really great defender? How can I cover the hitters around me so that they can trust that they can swing as hard as they want? But another thing that I try to focus on as much as I can is my connection with my teammates. Knowing what each player needs, whether it's some type of talking to them, a handshake, or looking them in the eyes. I think that's something that has, you know, really kind of infected the way I play and the people around me. And I always try to think, how can I make everyone else around me without the ball? So yeah, like I said, those eye contact things and learning about the people around you and learning what gets them to go and what shuts them down and taking the time to be a really great teammate goes a really long way.
Cool. Well, I wanted to go back to that everything else, or what you were saying about how everyone else is better than you, how you have that kind of moment where you're realizing that, because that really hits home for me, because I feel like pretty much everyone I play with is better than me. And I wanted to see what you thought about, I guess, just generally comparing yourself to others. Is there value there in seeing like, oh, that's what I have to get to? Or is it more detrimental to compare and think about what you don't have or do have?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. I think it can go both ways. I believe that I got to this point in my career and I got to where I am by pushing myself like that and by, okay, you know what, they're better than me, so I got to be in the gym working as hard as I can. And I kind of approach it like I'm going to outwork everyone around me and outwork the people next to me. And I'm just going to stay out there as long as I can. Because people have different traits that I don't have. And I think at this point in my career, it's kind of in the phase of acceptance. Like, this is what I bring to the table, and how can I be really great at that, like those things? So I don't think it can go, or it goes one way or the other. And I think it's very individual, but I'm really at the point of, you know, I'm a great volleyball player and I have a lot of great skills, and how can I maximize those things? And how can I just be a really great teammate to not only the USA team, but how can I be a really great teammate to the foreigners that I play with, whether there's a language barrier or not? And those are things that don't even require talking. It's just the little things. But I do think having that, like, that motivation inside can be a good thing. And as far as the negative thoughts go, I think those are things that just happen naturally. And the more you try to control them, the more it can, you know, pull you down. I've found that for me, acknowledging that those thoughts are there and then replacing them with really positive thoughts. And also when you acknowledge them, you recognize that those aren't real. Like me saying I'm the worst player on this court is a false statement, but that's the reality of what I'm thinking. And it's not correct. So just replacing it with the positive thoughts helps me to, you know, lock back into what I'm doing in the moment.
And Kelsey, does fighting through this adversity, whether it's the injury or, you know, being in a gym with such, you know, great players, does that come natural to you? Are you always going to stick with it? Or were there times where you've felt like quitting or just kind of, you know, it'd be a lot easier to stop playing? Like, what made you stick it out?
Yeah, I think it's easy for me to say like, oh, I love adversity, blah, blah, blah. But, right. There's been times when I'm done, I'm out, I can't do this anymore. But I think like what's kept me going is that like love of competition and that like drive there and the drive to be better. And yeah, there is a part of me that does kind of love adversity. It's not my favorite thing, but when you can come through it and recognize like what you put yourself through and what you got out of it, I think it's a really powerful thing. And I've just been able to experience a lot of, you know, positive outcomes and, you know, even the negative ones where it didn't work out. I've kind of found a way to go from there, at least, to, okay, this didn't work out in my favor, but how can I find a way to keep going, and how can I find a way to get where I want to go? I have a lot of goals, and I think that's helped me also to get through adversity. Is, and I think when I was actually, for example, when I was leaving Tennessee, I didn't know if I wanted to keep going with indoor volleyball. I thought it was going to be done. I thought I was going to get my degree and quit volleyball, just because I had been through some challenging things. And at the end of the day, my biggest goal was to go to the Olympics and to represent USA. And so maybe indoor at that moment wasn't going to work out, or it didn't seem like a possibility. So for like a year to 2 years, I trained on the sand because I wanted to go to the Olympics more than anything. And that was what helped me get through that moment where I was going to quit and give it all up. And obviously, it worked out in a different route than sand, but I'm really grateful that I didn't stop competing and I didn't stop going after my goals.
Can you go through your goal setting process? Like, is there a time that you do it, beginning of a year, end of a year? And what does it look like? Are you writing stuff down? Is there like really tangible things?
Yeah. At the beginning of the whole Olympic process or national team process and even college and stuff like that, it was kind of like, okay, well, even high school, I just want to get a scholarship. I want to get a scholarship and I want to go play. And then when I was in college, I want to win an SEC championship. I want to win a Big Ten championship when I transferred. And then when I got to the national team, it was everything and anything to get to the Olympics. Like, that was what I wanted. And so when I sat down, it was always the Olympics, the Olympics, the Olympics. And then I started diving into myself as a player and as a person, because I think when I made that huge goal for the Olympics, it just became this like end all be all of what I wanted and what defined me. And when you're going through something as challenging as making a 12-person roster every 4 years, you can let it dictate your life. And I think that was something that was holding me back from being the player I wanted to be at the end of Rio. And when I finally sat down and kind of made the goal setting process more tangible, and weekly to monthly to half year and then all year and then 4 years, it became more of like a plan, and then it became tangible, and then it became something that I have control of instead of like this once every 4 year thing that is so big and is all encompassing in my life. And it really helped me to focus on what I was doing day to day, and knowing that I was doing the right things and taking the right steps to get to that end goal, that big end dream goal. But I actually sat down with Tom Black, and he helped me really lock those goals in. And we do, you know, weekly, I'll do like two things about volleyball that I want to change, whether it's my footwork or my approach or my arm swing. And we do, okay, this week I'll watch film. How many times did I do it every day? Maybe it was 2 out of 10 times. And then, you know, next week I'm doing it 5 out of 10 times. And then the week after I'm doing it 8 out of 10, and then finally 10 out of 10. And then we check that one off and then we move on to the next thing. And so it's weekly, and well, it's daily and then it's weekly. And it's something just so controlled by me. And you start to focus more on the process and what's in front of you than the end of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, what have been, I guess, just curious, some of your more recent technical goals, as far as whether you're working on something currently or some sort of technique you wanted to change recently?
Yeah. Something that has kind of stuck with me is my footwork. And it's funny because the minute I stop thinking about it is when it gets bad. And I'll like go like a month and I'll be like, I don't need to think about this. And then I'm not hitting as well as I want to, or I'm not getting my feet to the ball. And I go back and I watch video and I'm like, well, there it is on video, because I stopped thinking about it. And So I always am focused on my footwork, and that's making sure I'm really fast on the ball. I like to go, instead of the slow to fast approach, I like to go fast to fast. Mm-hmm. And that usually makes me really early for the ball. And a lot of times I don't get a lot of power on it when I'm fast to fast. So just making sure that I'm really slow to fast, and my last two are pretty explosive. And so those are like technical things. And then this last 2 months in Italy, I was playing professionally in Italy, and we had Champions League Final Four and also our league championships called the Scudetto. And our team had just battled injury after injury. We were literally dropping like flies. It was really demanding and difficult. And I was passing two for the entire 3-4 months I was there. And we played about 12 to 15 games a month. So passing two when teams aren't serving the libero, they're serving me, can get challenging. So something that helped me to show up every single day and not feel fatigued or not feel like I can't do it was just connecting with my libero. I always said to myself before I stepped on the court, I'm going to almost use my libero as a lifeline, and she's going to help me get through this. And we were really close actually, which helped a lot too. But just making eye contact with her between every single serve, having really good movement, whether I was going in front of her or going behind her during the passing seams, was important. And that really helped me to lock in and stay focused on passing, because basically we had so many injuries that we had to be in system for us to be successful. And, so I took that upon myself to be really great for not only my teammates, but also for my setter, that so that we could run our system. And then lastly, not a technique focus, but a mental focus for me was just the idea that I was going to give every single ounce of myself to my teammates. And I was going to do it no matter how tired I was and no matter how drained I was, every single point, every single play, I was going to give as much as myself as I could. And I was going to do it with love. And that helped me stay focused no matter how tired I was. I was always locked into every single point just by thinking those thoughts. And I really believe that if I hadn't prepared myself for those games with those three keys, I wouldn't have been able to help it. We lost in the semifinals, unfortunately, but in both Champions League and the Scudetto, but I don't think we would have been able to get there. And I don't think I would have been able to perform the way I wanted to perform if I hadn't prepared myself mentally before those things.
Very cool. It sounds like some very thought out and very precise focuses that you have. Not just kind of leaving it up to random chance. And I wanted to go back to the kind of the first thing you were talking about, kind of the more technical side with your approach. I think a lot of people will focus on something they're really good at that they can maybe do 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And I think that feels good, but they're probably not getting better. I'm wondering, I guess, what makes you choose something that you're only able to do 2 out of 10? What's the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, I hate it. I hate watching video. Actually, Tom Black was my video guy all quad, and I would cringe watching video before or after games or after practices. But he just always kept on me, and always, I mean, he let me decide if I was going to do it, and I always did it because I wanted to get better. But it's definitely challenging to watch yourself fail over and over again. And even balls that I would watch, I had a kill on, and he'd be like, "Is that good footwork?" And I was like, "Yeah, I got a kill." And he's like, "We're not looking at the outcome. We're looking at your feet." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right. That's not what I want to see." So I had some help there. I can't say it's all myself, but I think also not only from my coaches, but from just that self-motivation to be better and that drive to make the rosters or make the team and not only just be good for my teammates, but also I wanted to be, well, I still, my goal is to be one of the best passing outsides in the world. And I think if you can't push yourself, then you're not never going to get where you want to go. So combination of self-motivation and then also having really great people and a really great support system surrounding me that also pushes me.
So then what about, like, I know it's a big deal. You want to make the roster and you want to make a good impression and you want to, especially in practice, like I think film's one thing, but in practice, you want to show like your coaching staff and your teammates how good you are, but you need to make this change technically. Like, how do you feel like you're able to stay on that? Even if it, cause I feel like your results suffer a little bit, right? When you're working on something new, how do you balance that?
Yeah, totally. I think we're really fortunate in the USA gym. Karch has cultivated an atmosphere where we're allowed to fail and we're allowed to focus on the process. I think one of the things I learned in my first year was listening to Krista Dietzen. Just learning from her, she was talking to a group about blocking, and she's one of the best blockers in the world. We played Russia in world championships, and we were up like 5-0 because she had blocked, like bounce blocked them 5 times in a row, and it was incredible to watch. But she was telling me, she purposely is late arriving when she's closing the block because she's so focused on getting her feet right. And while everybody else was getting there but not doing it right, she was always late for like a year, 2 years, constantly late, but still focused on that process. And then I think she said like the third year of the quad, it finally like clicked, it finally happened. And she was, not only was she there, but she was the most explosive. She was doing it right every time. She was bounce blocking everybody, hands over. And yeah, she made the London Olympics, but her story is a really great one too, just as far as facing that adversity and facing those challenges of not being where you want to be, but knowing that putting the time in is going to get her where she wants to go. So I think the atmosphere that Karch has created, and then when you're overseas, you kind of have to do it yourself. But I've also been really lucky to have coaches overseas that allow me to be creative and to fail and know that it's okay to not always do it right, but know that you're going in the direction where you want to go.
Cool. That's, I really like that story. And it just pains me that it takes 3 years to do it, but it's cool to hear the payoff with someone who really stayed with it. So you put in the work, you stayed process oriented, you made the roster, you got to go to Rio, you were part of the number one ranked team in the world, and you guys are on a roll, and then lose a heartbreaker in the semis to play for the gold. Can you take us through how the team and how you overcame that adversity, and you guys were able to bounce back and win the bronze medal the next day?
Yeah, that was one of, like, I think the most painful moments in my career and probably a really painful moment in my life. I think when we got back to the hotel, everybody was just kind of like shocked and just wasn't really processing a lot, just because we were undefeated at that point. And you want to win gold at the Olympics. That's the dream. That's the goal. But we took some time to kind of let everybody have their space and handle it how they needed to, whether it was just getting alone time or going with family or getting some food. And then we met as a team that night and kind of went around the room, and everybody said what they needed to say. And ultimately we came up with the idea that what we're doing right now in the USA gym is so much bigger than a gold medal. Gold medal doesn't define what we do and who we are as people and players and what our team stands for. I think it was devastating because we had spent all this time making sure we were doing it right and we were putting in all the work and also just connecting as teammates and as people. And so when we didn't obviously achieve gold, it was devastating. But the reality was that a gold medal doesn't define what we're doing and the work that we're putting in. And so we have an opportunity to face that adversity that, you know, we can show up tomorrow and just not really care. And, you know, woe is us. We aren't going to get gold. Or we can come together as a team and lean on each other, even though it hurts and even though it's difficult and painful. But that's what we're here for, is to support each other and to help each other be the best player they can be in that moment. And so I think our team did a really great job of choosing to make it a positive outcome, and choosing to lean on each other during that last game to win bronze. And it was a challenging game and it was demanding, and we didn't start off that strong, but I thought, you know, we just kept going and kept facing the adversity and kept pushing together. And it does feel great to leave the Olympics with a win. That's, I guess, the silver lining, and to not have to leave after losing. So I think as much as we wanted gold, I think we're just really, really proud to have bronze, and it keeps us, you know, hungry for more for 2020.
You said that after the loss, that everybody kind of had their space to do their own thing. I guess, what were you doing? Were you talking to family? Were you headbutting the wall? Where were you at?
Yeah, I was like hiding out in my room. I think I'm not the best after losses. I kind of just need to go mellow out a bit by myself and get my thoughts in order and stuff like that. And just, I think it's okay to feel the pain, like really acknowledge the pain and like feel it. And it's a really cool thing to know that you care that much, to know that it hurts that much because you put everything into it. And that's kind of how I process things and deal with them, is just kind of having my space to, you know, run through my thoughts, because I'm going to replay the game in my head and I'm going to replay what I did wrong or what I could have done better, because I think that's just natural. And then letting it go and moving on and choosing to move on in a positive direction and not think about what had just happened, but how can I be better for myself and be better for the people around me.
When you face adversity off the court, how do you stay focused on getting the most out of practice or being your best in a match? Because sometimes that can creep in and affect, I guess, how hard you go in practice and stuff. But how do you deal with that?
Yeah, totally. I think there's just so many things that can be distractions for us as female athletes, and also in athletes in general. But I think as female athletes, we have a little bit more emotions involved and tend to feel things a little bit more, I would say. So that can go into effect when you're talking about off the court things. But one thing I choose to do when I walk into the gym doors is leave whatever happened outside or whatever has happened that day or the previous days or what's going on in my life. I kind of just decide to try to let it go and try to focus completely on what my task at hand is that day. And that almost pretty much helps me to forget about anything that's happening in the day or anything that's stressing me out or giving me anxiety. It's just like, this is the place where I get to let all of that go. And I get to just like be 100% myself and be where I love to be, competing and working hard and playing the game I love. And that in return helps me to forget about what's going on in my life. And then once I leave, I can face all those things. But it's kind of a little safe place for me is when I'm in the gym practicing or with my teammates and being supported by them. I think that's the best way for me, at least, to handle it. I know other people have their different ways, but that's how I do it, I guess.
And when do you decide on your task for practice? Is it the same every day, or how do you decide that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of weekly, and then like I said, if I can get to those times when it's 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 and I feel really, really great with what I'm working on, then I'll move on. But just kind of having a journal and like writing them down, or if you're not a journal person, checking in with yourself mentally is always a great way to do it. Just what you have to do today or what you're focused on. And I try to do kind of two things that are task oriented as far as volleyball goes, and then one thing that's maybe a mental skill or I guess just trying to help out my teammates or something that doesn't really involve volleyball. But that's kind of what I try to think about going into every single practice, is the three things I'm going to be really great at today And that really helps me to zone in on what my focus is and how I'm going to make the most out of practice.
I like that a lot. I think that's really powerful. People can use that. I'm going to use it for sure. So yeah. Can you remind me, you when we talked to you 6 months ago, you were in China. Did you play the whole year in China, or you went to Italy?
Yeah, so China is actually the shortest of all the professional leagues.
Okay.
And so my season was done like mid-January, and okay. which allowed me to transfer to Italy by the transfer date. So yeah, I had like a 1 week break, and then I went right to Italy, and I was supposed to have some time off when I went to Italy, but then all the outsides got hurt. And so I was playing pretty much every single game, and it was fun. It was just a little demanding.
It seemed, I'm sure China and Italy are pretty much the same exact culture and food and place. And,
totally. Yeah,
just kidding. But so you play professional season and experience these different cultures and foods. And I'm sure there's all sorts of diversity with the coaching styles, both on and off the court. So can you go through some of the challenges you faced and just how you managed and got the best out of those situations?
Yeah. I think wherever you go to play, there's always just, I mean, there's the general challenge of playing overseas and being abroad that everybody can kind of relate to, but then you have your like challenges within your own season and where you are. For me, China, it was a little bit difficult just because some of the food kind of makes you a little bit sick, or you can't
eat a little bit.
A little bit.
Really sick.
Yeah. So, and then you can't eat the protein there. Or a lot of the meats, just because it can test you positive for steroids. So that was definitely a challenge, was finding a way to maintain strength while maybe I wasn't getting the nutrients or the things I needed to eat that I was used to. And then in China, the language barrier is really, really difficult. I had a translator for some of the time, but for the most part, it's kind of just you and your thoughts mostly, like all day, and not a lot of communication with other people. I was lucky enough to have another American on my team, Carstolo. And so you have each other, but obviously being stuck together for 4 months and only having each other to talk to sit next to travel with, to eat with, it can be challenging. And I'm really, really lucky for her friendship. We definitely were tested together, and it wasn't always like rainbows, but we're better for it, and we have a great friendship outside of it. And yeah, so I'm really lucky that I got to play with her. But so that was definitely difficult, and obviously coaching styles are different, and sometimes you can question why we're doing things or what we're doing, but the end of the day, I think, you know, you signed up to do a job and to do it at the best of your ability. And so you have to be a professional about it, and you have to find a way to get through those demands. And I think something I remember saying in our last podcast, and I still feel that way now, is I think we can find, when you're overseas a lot or when you're in challenging situations for a long time, it's like, okay, this 4 months, I just have to get through 4 months and then I'll be done in January and I can move on and be happy and do whatever's next. But I think that allows us to miss what's happening right in front of us. And you start thinking that way too much and you miss out what's happening in your life, and you're letting your life go by without really enjoying the opportunity at hand and the experience, whether it's positive or negative. And just trying to find a way to really embrace a different culture, embrace a different style of volleyball, and embrace different foods, and find a way to be grateful for what's been given. And then once I went to Italy, I went to the same team I played with last year, but the team was completely different. So I felt really comfortable going in with like the coaching staff because they were the same, or with the managers and the owners and stuff, but my team was completely different. So I had to find a way to, you know, fit in and be a great teammate and have friendships and find what fit, what works well for different people halfway through a challenging season. And we had Champions League right away, and we had Coppa Italia right away. So I had to do it within like a time span of 3 weeks. And so, and all these girls speak Italian. So it was pretty difficult to do that. And you try to do the best you can. And like I said, you try to be a professional and do your job and still enjoy the opportunity that's been given. And obviously every country has their own thing and it's never going to be like home or America, but going into it with the mindset of being grateful for the chance to play the game you love really, I think, has helped me to cope with those difficulties.
Cool. There's a lot of good stuff. I love how you talk about just, it seems like a lot of being present, like acknowledging when things are painful and acknowledging when you should be grateful for things. And that just seems like great advice for all these experiences. For if you were going to coach coaches and give them some advice on how they can help young athletes or professional athletes manage adversity, what sort of advice would you give them?
I think something that has really helped me is just the coaches that were always pushing me to be creative or pushing me to fail and allowing me to fail and allowing me to mess up and know that it's okay, I'm not going to get cut or all those like negative outcomes, but just really pushing me to want to be better and to want to do it right, but knowing that I'm going to fail at it. I think that can be really powerful for a lot of their players, and just being motivational in the idea that players can be creative or they can work on things and work on things in practice and not have to get a kill every single time. And I know a lot of coaches stat practice, or I know stats play a role into it. We're statted in the USA gym too. But I just think, okay, you can have your stats and you can look at them, but not being like solely focused on that, but really seeing, looking at a player and seeing who they can be instead of who they are now. I know that's probably tougher to do, and I'm not a coach, so I don't really know how that goes. But I think if you don't put all your emphasis on stats, that you can really see a player for who they can be.
Yeah, I thought what you said before about we were watching film with Tom, how like you'd see an end result of a good swing, like his feedback was more on the process. So, I mean, it seems like that's a pretty powerful message to send.
Yeah, and I always would say to him, I was just like, but I got to go. So what are you saying? And he finally would just be like, do you care about the kill right now? Or do you care about who you, like the kills later and the kills that will matter and the kills that are important when we need them? I'm like, yeah, I get it. And yeah. So eventually you work through those things, and it takes time. It's not easy. And as much as I can sit here and say, like, you need to be present to enjoy things, I'm not perfect at it and I'm not great at it. But I think the biggest thing for me is just having that awareness to reel it back in when I start to think about the future, start to think about what I've done wrong in the past, or like when I wasn't perfect, or games that I had that were bad, or the negative thoughts and stuff like that. I think the biggest change in who I am as a player now is just having that awareness of those thoughts and being able to kind of bring myself back to being present.
Cool. You mentioned some of the, I guess, the culture that Karch has instilled with the national team, as far as it's okay to make mistakes and a little leeway on that kind of stuff. What is the atmosphere like in that gym between you and the other players?
That's a good question. It's really weird because everybody like really, really gets along and everybody supports each other. And actually, like, the outside hitters are some of my best friends in the gym, even though we're competing against each other. And even though like there's days where I'm like, just mess up, man, let me in. And so like that can be really, really difficult to, and it's like a weird concept to think about competing with your best friends. And, but I really think that at the end of the day, everybody just wants what's best for the team in the like whole picture. And that really helps you kind of balance those, that weird dynamic of competing and getting along and pushing each other. And also I think that taking it day by day and trying to be the best you can for the people around you helps that too. And then you just forget about the fact that you're competing against them and you just want to do well for your side to win the drill. And most of the time what I'm thinking about besides helping my teammates and besides being great in my footwork or being great mentally is winning. Like I just want to win that drill and I want to win and be out there as long as I can, because the more you win, the more you get to play. So I think it's a tricky dynamic, but when you want what's best for the program, that can really help.
Cool. Well, we have a couple of questions from Tom Black, who he's already come up a lot, but he's the one who suggested speaking with you. So I asked questions from him. So one of them is, he says, you went from a libero to an outside to a back row sub and back to outside. How did you handle all those different roles throughout the quad?
Well, he will know best that it wasn't always easy for me. And I had like three people in my life that I would call on rotate when things weren't going well. I was like, okay, I'll call my dad, then I'll talk to this person, and then the next person I'll talk when things aren't going well. And finally, I just got into the habit of thinking, I'm just going to be the best at what is asked of me today. And that was about the last 2 years of the quad. Whatever role that they wanted me to be, I was going to be the best at it. And if it was, you know, a back row sub, I was going to make sure that the other team didn't serve me, because they knew that I was going to come in and dime balls. Or if I was going in as an outside, I was going to focus on my footwork and be really steady and consistent for everybody else. And it was just that idea that it didn't matter what I was going to do today, but whatever it was, I was going to be really great at. And that really helped me to lock in the process and be present, and also face that challenge of never really knowing what I was going to play that day or what I was going to do. And that made me a really versatile player, and it made me really valuable to the team, knowing that I could play a lot of different roles.
It's a good way to look at it. So he has one more question, and we've touched on this some, but he gets a little more specific, so we can still ask it. How was it for you as a player managing the desire to perform with the need to improve? And how did you handle it in practice? And what about the long trips on the road where practice time was limited?
Yeah, I think that last, I mean, we've talked about it before, and I think that last part is really a great part of the question, because when you're on Grand Prix and when you're on World Cups and major events, you have limited, you have maybe an hour and a half of practice every day. And that can go from a serve and pass, or we could actually be competing. But knowing that, okay, I have an hour and a half and I got to get my work done. And so showing up and staying on task and working really hard. And okay, maybe this time it's not out of 10 reps, but it's out of 5 reps. I'm going to take 5 approaches and I'm going to make sure that those approaches are the best that I can make them. That way I can walk away knowing that I got a little bit better today. And yeah, I think something that players can do now is just watching a lot of video. I wasn't always a video person. I actually hated watching video until I found it really useful and challenged myself to get better at it. And it can really, you know, pinpoint what you're doing and pinpoint how you can get better. So I think watching video is really important. And then having maybe 1 or 2 or 3 goals that you have each day. Those are two things that I've found to be really powerful in my development as a player.
Can you take us through how you watch film now? Or what's your process with it? Just watching all the highlights?
I rarely watch balls. The highlights. I wish. No, I'll process. Just.
That's what Billy does.
I'll just go through each skill. And I have like 2 or 3 different focuses for each skill that I'm thinking about. And if I want to break down hitting, I'll watch those 3 things, or maybe it's 1 thing that day. and kind of see how many times I've done it right. And then what's cool is because the next time I can watch it, then I can like actually see, okay, how many times I'm doing it right and did that change from the last time. That way it makes it really like goal oriented day by day. And that's something that helps me because if I'm not thinking about things like tangible or controllable, I get too far outside of like the controllables. I just start thinking about the future and all the things I need to do and all the things I need to get better at. And so I kind of try to reel it in by making it very day by day and breaking it down so that they are tangible.
Okay. Sorry, I want to break it down a little bit more. So are you're actually writing it down like, okay, today I did it 3 out of 10, and you're not going, oh, I got 3 out of 10 where I hit really sharp angle. What would your 3 out of 10 be?
Yeah. So like I said, right now it's my footwork. And it's making sure that I'm going slow to fast and I'm making my first two steps towards the ball. Like I want to take sometimes I have the tendency to go towards the pole, like always in my approach, obviously not towards the pole, like hitting the pole, but I go like really wide. And so making sure that my feet are going towards the ball so that I can be as explosive as possible when I'm reaching my point of contact. Yeah. And then making sure that it's slow to fast and my last two steps are explosive. So I'll break it down and then, I'll write it down and kind of have a journal, or I'll put it on my phone, depending on what I'm using that day. But I think when you write it down, you can kind of see, and then it makes it more controllable.
So if your first and second step were slow, like so you start with a walk and they're both directional towards the set and you jump and whiff the ball, would that be a positive? Like it'd be part of your,
yeah,
like it'd be 6 out of 10. Cool.
Yeah. And then there's times when I'm going wide and I can see that immediately now, or now it's to the point where I can feel it. Like I don't need a coach to watch me and then tell me what I was doing or if it was wrong. Now I can feel it every single time when I'm at my point of contact, because I know when I've gone fast to fast because I'm early, or I know when I've gone wide because I have to broad jump or I tend to have to reach and I don't have the shots that I know I have. But when everything's like going and it's perfect and lined up and my feet are doing what they're supposed to do, I can hit cross court, I can hit line, I can tool, I can roll shot, I can hit 5-6. Like I'm just aware of what I can do now that I feel the difference in my feet.
Cool. So you have built-in feedback, it sounds like. So like if you don't have vision, you can't hit with range, you just know right away, I'm going to start slower next time.
Yeah, really.
I like it.
Yeah, that's cool. Kelsey, well, thank you so much. We've had a lot of awesome discussions here. I'd like to ask one final question. Are we going to see you playing on the beach someday? When are you going to be done with all this indoor nonsense?
Yeah, I mean, I love sand volleyball. So I think that I owe a lot of my indoor game to having those 2 years of training. And I think I can see myself on the sand. I don't know about Tokyo, but after that, for sure.
What were your 2 years of training? I know you had a little break, but were you just down there with some, like just playing against other people? Did you have a coach? What was your strategy?
In Tennessee, I trained like after practices or after weights, I would drive to a sand place and do that training and run down balls and hit. And I would drag people out there with me to do it with me. And then I would, in the summer, I'd fly out to California and just kind of try to pick up practices. Or I was really good friends with Emily Stockman and Leah Hinkey, and they did a lot of, Emily's a pro and she's amazing. And she kind of took me in and would help me, let me come to practices. Or if people needed a fourth, I would do that. And then I did some USA Beach. And actually, obviously at Nebraska, I did, it was like the first year of sand volleyball, or maybe it was like the second year in college. So I did that. But when I got my tryout with USA Indoor, that like week, USA Beach, I had the opportunity to go play in one of like the like U23s in Russia, or like something for the youth like program of sand and stuff. So that was exactly during my tryout with the USA indoor team. So I kind of had to face that challenge and make a difficult decision. And I kind of just thought, you know, okay, the beach will always be there and I'm going to give this tryout on the indoor team a shot and see what happens. And fortunately it worked out, but I really, really love sand volleyball and it's always been a really great release for me mentally. Even though it's kind of the same game, but you guys know it's totally not. So
who can hold a longer plank, you or Emily?
Emily, have you seen her abs?
She's intimidating.
She's gnarly. She's really gnarly.
We play volleys and I've only beat her one time. And when I beat her, it was like the best thing that had ever happened.
Well, if you do ever come out to the beach, I think you should. There's plenty of adversity out there for you. There's no money. There's a lot of wind. There's a lot of challenges. So you'll be ready. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, beach is awesome.
I love it. But I just actually moved to Manhattan Beach and I was doing like short court and was breathing so heavy. I thought I was going to like pass out. And I was like, oh my God, I need to get in shape. I thought I was in shape, but I'm not.
Well, you'll be mentally ready. You've faced some challenges and you've learned a lot of great stuff that I'm sure people are going to listen to and use. So thanks so much for giving us all this info and spending the time again. And I think this second round too is even better. So you're awesome for doing that. We really appreciate it.
It wouldn't be as good. So I'm happy to be here.
That was great.
Talk again. Awesome.
Thanks, Kelsey.
Cool. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you guys.